of America.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent McCorry, sitting in today for Shaka Saleh. Today we will take a look at the impact of the recent protests in Nigeria under the hashtag #EndSARS and the reaction from the administration in Abuja. Now, protests against police brutality in Nigeria erupted last October following excessive force by a unit known as the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, or SARS. The protests spread to several cities across the country, lasted for weeks, and garnered global attention. The Nigerian government has made reforms, including dissolving the police unit. But activists, academics, and human rights advocates say the fight for justice and sustainable change is far from over. VOA's Salem Solomon has more.
Lekki Toll Gate, a nondescript toll plaza on a busy Lagos highway, has become a rallying cry for Nigerians demanding police reform. After dark on October 20, eyewitnesses say security forces opened fire on protesters demonstrating against Nigeria's Special Anti-Robbery Squad, known as SARS. According to Amnesty International, at least 12 people were killed at Lekki and a second location, though the government said two people died.
This place was a war zone. But it was one army fighting civilians. Unarmed civilians. Peaceful civilians. Civilians who were exercising their constitutional right.
Days of confrontation followed between protesters and police, the largest in more than a generation. The clashes left at least 51 civilians, 11 police officers, and 7 soldiers dead, according to government figures. The Nigerian government vowed investigations and reform. It disbanded the SARS unit, reassigned officers, and promised additional human rights training. There are several investigations underway looking into alleged police abuse of power. Officials in recent days admitted that the soldiers did have live rounds while at Lekki, but they say that forces did not fire into the crowd and acted with restraint.
At this point, it is important to say that the federal government is very satisfied with the role played by the security agencies, especially the military and the police, all through the EndSARS crisis. The security agents were professional and measured in their response. Even when their lives were at stake, they exercised uncommon restraint.
Rights groups say that the SARS unit, before it was disbanded, had been a symbol of excessive force.
This unit had been associated with egregious and systematic human rights abuses, including torture, extrajudicial execution, arbitrary detention. They were almost a law unto themselves and had been the focus of concern by the media as well as by domestic and international human rights groups for several years. And so when the announcement came that the unit was going to be disbanded, on the one hand, it represented a major step forward, but on the other hand, there was nothing else. And that triggered the protests that were linked to calls for systematic, comprehensive security sector reform and reform of the police.
Protesters say disbanding the SARS police unit was not enough. They are calling for lasting police reform at all levels, and they say their demands are not being met. There are allegations that Nigeria's security forces continue to use heavy-handed tactics against members of the public and have done so for years. During last summer's COVID-19 lockdown, Nigeria's National Human Rights Commission found that security forces killed 18 people. Rights groups say the culture of police abuse is pervasive. In Africa's most populous nation, where the median age is 18, many of the protesters are young people. Analysts say their public dissent is likely to continue.
But one thing is clear, right? What is clear is that the youth in Nigeria are awake, right? They have decided that they have a voice, right? And that the government is going to hear their voice one way or the other.
Nigeria's attempt for reform is being closely watched in the United States, where policymakers have been instrumental in calling for reform and organizing the Nigerian diaspora to demand action from the international community. After protests spread throughout Nigeria in October, U.S. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, marched with her constituents in the Mickey Leland Federal Building in Houston to show solidarity with the Nigerian protesters.
They want a free, peaceful Nigeria, free of the killing of innocent persons. They're outraged by the violence, the burning that they've seen, the killing at the gate that they have had to experience. They had a video showing the outright shooting by military persons that would really break your heart, because you know that unarmed persons lost their life that night. Someone's young son or daughter.
Opal Demedi, a Nigerian-American human rights activist, says Nigeria must allow public dissent.
It is not tenable. The brutality that the protesters have been met with is not tenable. They had a right to assemble. They have a right to protest. And in many ways, it's their duty to protest when things have been so bad. When they've gotten to a certain point, you have no other choice.
As a Nigerian judicial panel continues its investigation into excessive force, 154 organizations from the world over have asked the International Criminal Court in The Hague to conduct its own probe. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Well, thank you, Salim, for that report. But today we are including parts of the interview by Alhaj Lai Mohammed, the Minister of Information and Culture of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, who joined my colleague Peter Clote from the VOA studio in Abuja last week. He's joining me to talk about the recent protests in Nigeria. From New York, Dr. Yetunde Odbesan Omede, Professor of Political Science at Farmingdale State College. And from Abuja, Grace Alheri Abdul, Managing Editor of the Voice of America's House of Service. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Well, first, I would like to go to the minister's reaction to allegations that civilians were targeted during some protests by police and military.
They said fake news.
Right.
And the irresponsible use of social media contributed largely to the violence that was harvested clearly after the NSAS protest was hijacked by hoodlums. Now, to start with, it's quite sad that in all the reportage, nobody has yet emphasized the fact that 37 police officers lost their lives to hoodlums, that six soldiers were killed by hoodlums, that 134 police stations were vandalized by hoodlums, that 164 police vehicles were burned by hoodlums, that over 234 public and private properties were destroyed by hoodlums, or that in this unprovoked violence, which hoodlums hijacked, that even properties belonging to young, struggling young men and women were destroyed, or that 81 government warehouses were looted. It appears that The CSOs, the media, have been very unfair in their reportage.
Well, let me come to you first, Dr. Yetunde. You've listened to the minister there, Minister Lai Mohammed. What do you make of his assertions?
He has to speak from a place of representing the government and trying to put them in the best light, given the situation. However, as you have to know his position. However, due to all of the footage that we have seen We cannot, in a sense, challenge the video recording. We are in a new age where technology has been able to expose a lot of the issues that are going on in different countries around the world. And this is no different. We had DJ Switch, who who was one of the people who raised the alarm through her phone recording about the protesters being peacefully assembled being shot by Nigerian Army. We've heard different stories come out from the Nigerian Army, from the government of Lagos, Governor of Lagos, saying different stories. But unfortunately, I think the issue here is that they truly need to understand the plight of the citizens that they are in charge to protect, right? It is their fundamental right, their constitutional right, to peacefully assemble and to peacefully protest and bring light to the issues that are affecting everyday citizens in Nigeria. When that is met with excessive force, okay, which has been happening over the years, this is not an overnight situation. Many young people have been brutalized, have been illegally detained by SARS and by the police unit. Yeah. And they have the right to ask the government, what are you doing to protect our needs, as they are responsible to do. So although we understand that protests can get hijacked, I mean, that does happen, but at the same time, we need to look at the root causes of what even started the protest to begin with. And not addressing that, I think, is the biggest issue that we are seeing. And not being able to empathize and communicate the suffering of many who have lost their family members to police brutality, I think, is also an area that they have not done the best on.
Yeah. And the minister called this unprovoked violence. So something that maybe I'd like you to kind of chime in on. But let me first ask, Grace, you've been in Nigeria for some time now, and the minister there talked about the media hasn't reported on, for example, how many police officers were killed. It talks about 37, six soldiers killed. It talks about government property being vandalized, government police vehicles being burned. What have you seen in the reporting locally of those events?
Well, I think it would be so unfair to the media for the minister to say that those instances, the killings that he mentioned in that interview, were not reported. If you would go on the internet, the good thing that is that now everything that is reported, you can easily Google and you'll find it. I believe that if he himself would go and check, you would find a lot of that report. And the media, it has been widely covered, it's still being covered. But the thing is, so long as you cover something that is not something that they are interested in, they just see the other side as either being underreported or overreported. The issue still remains, that issue of one thing I can tell you that both the protesters and the government agreed on is the fact that that protest was hijacked by hoodlum. You heard him say that himself. And the young man that I interviewed when I went to Lagos, the young man that was frontliner in this protest, the one that is the speaker, now the spokesperson for End Protest, that is Temi Tope, who is also a member of the Lagos panel of investigation, said at first they were working with the RRS units of the police, making sure that anybody that was committing crime was arrested and handed over to the police until the hoodlums that they were claiming were brought by either politicians or people that were there to sabotage the protest, infiltrated them and started causing chaos.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, rights organizations have called on the Nigerian government to allow peaceful protests and release protesters who were arrested. Adote Akoye, Managing Director of Government Relations at Amnesty International, USA, alleges that the Nigerian government shut off short-circuit TV before the crackdown in Alawasa.
Including in the most recent protest in Lekki and Alawasa, where, again, nonviolent protests were met with great brutality. And in fact, in Alawasa, we found that there was credible evidence that there was efforts to shut off short-circuit TV that would have monitored how the police behaved, which indicates that they were planning a very brutal crackdown, and that's unfortunately what happened. So we continue to stick with the calls for the Nigerian government to respect the right to nonviolent protest, the Nigerian government to respect the individual rights of the protesters, for the protesters who've been arrested to be released, and also, of course, for the Nigerian government to engage in genuine comprehensive security sector reform and accountability for the SARS unit members.
So did the Nigerian government shut off the CCTV? Let's listen to Nigeria's Minister of Information's response to the Human Rights Watch allegations.
The same CCTV that he claimed was shut down by government is the same CCTV that has been producing evidence before the panel in Lagos. And the same CCTV that the CNN is branding to be further evidence of killings at the toll gate. So, one, it is not correct that anybody shut down the CCTV. Two, the CCTV has been tendered in evidence and there's nothing incriminating about the CCTV. Nothing has incriminated the soldiers on the so-called CCTV. You see, Peter, you just must appreciate the fact that fake news using social media as a preferred medium played a big role in helping the hoodlums and in aggravating the violence that followed the NSAS protest.
Well, Dr. Etunde, you see, the minister keeps coming back to the whole question of fake news. In your assessment, to what extent did actually fake news on social media exacerbate the situation such that now the focus became actually more under the hoodlums' activities and the destruction than the issues that were more critical to this demonstrations?
Well, it seems like we have extrapolated fake news from the United States all the way to Nigeria. And by categorizing everything under fake news, it's just another way to negate the reality of the situation. And it's another way to downplay the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is, look, there was excessive force that was met to peaceful protesters who have a constitutional and human right law protecting them to peacefully assemble without being met with brute force. And when we cannot just speak that in layman terms and when we cannot arrive to the assessment that the way that it was handled on October 20th was disproportionate in measures. And the fact of the matter is that another way to negate this story is by focusing on hoodlums, by focusing on protesters that came with the mission of trying to work and reform the government after crying out for so long that innocent people, young people who are the future of Nigeria, who have potential, who probably come from good families or struggling families that are just trying to make it, are either killed by excessive force, illegally detained, having their constitutional and human rights violated. That is not being discussed. How many mothers who have lost their child due to police brutality?
You know, Dr. Etunde, I get the sense that you feel that there's no compassion from government officials. Like, regardless of how violent this became, but there is that part of the human element that these are people's children. These are fellow citizens, right? These are not enemies from some other country, right?
And we have to understand our place in the world. Nigeria needs to understand its place in the continent. And I think, you know, President Obama said one thing. He said, you know, if Nigeria does right, the whole of Africa would get it right. And the interesting thing is that I actually agree with him. Because if we are to lead in this type of situation, and this happens in many different countries, right? These type of controversies, these realities about issues in the government and how it's being handled. If we put on a leadership face and says, look, we know that we need to do right. We know that there are some areas in our policing, in our security apparatus that needs reform. We are willing to work with the Nigerian people. We apologize to the families who have lost their lives to police brutality. Nothing that we say can bring the life back of a loved one whose potential has been lost. At least some of that will fall on the ears of the Nigerian people. All they wanted was to be reassured that you hear me and you hear my cry and that you are willing to work towards making Nigeria better. Yeah. But instead, they were attacked. Instead, they were laced with fake media. Instead, many of the peaceful protesters were even detained for speaking out against the government. And that is also an issue that we need to look at. And I hope the Nigerian government also looks at that and making sure that they become that beacon of leadership that the continent needs, and most importantly, that their citizens need.
Okay, and we still have more of the minister. We'll see what he says about the actions they intend to take or they have already taken. Now, Grace, there were protests in the north of Nigeria and also the southern part of Nigeria. What was the difference between them and were they related?
Well, they are kind of related, but they were all focusing on issues that affect them directly. While the people in Lagos were protesting against police brutality, people in northern Nigeria were particularly protesting against the insecurity that they are facing, while South-South were protesting against economic issues and resource management. So they were all, and it may also interest you to know that this NSAS protest, while the people in Lagos were protesting against the SARS, the people in Borno State specifically, in the Northeast, were protesting, demanding that they allow the SARS unit to stay.
Well, on the protests now in the north and south, here's what Minister Lai Mohammed had to say in our interview.
And I can say that there's absolutely no correlation between the insecurity in the north and the NSAS protests. On the contrary, many youth organizations in the northern part of Nigeria refused to join the NSAS protest.
Well, there you go. The minister talks about, it talks about the difference between those protests, but it says many youth refused to join the SARS. Dr. Yetunde, is this a perceived police brutality by SARS? Did it affect more people of the southern part of Nigeria than other parts of the country? And why is it that it did not resonate with the youths from other parts of Nigeria, especially the north?
We can't say that it did not resonate, because when we talk about insecurity, there are insecurity that happens in different categories, right? You have police brutality, you have terrorism, you have issues such as Boko Haram, and you have issues such as the herds killing and so forth. So when he says they're not correlated, he has to understand that this is the whole of the country. These are citizens that live in your country, regardless of the geopolitical zones. They are facing some form of insecurity, right? The insecurity may vary, but they are all facing some form of insecurity. For the north, we know that it's insecurity. We know that the borders are porous. We know that there is terrorism. We know that Boko Haram has also wreaked havoc. And even recently, from the massacre that happened, I believe it's in November 28th, with the 40 of the farmers who were killed. So insecurity is insecurity. And to say that none of them is connected or correlated means that you're not fully assessing the issues that are happening in different parts of Nigeria, not understanding that when there's a high level of insecurity in a country, there's a root cause to it. So for one area, it may be increased police brutality. In another area, it may be terrorism, which just has access to that area. So it varies in nature, and it doesn't mean that one is more important or less important than the other. Every life, every Nigerian life is as important to who is in the north, who is in the south. And because some in the south may not have joined some of the NSARS protests, does not undermine the plight of those who were protesting to end police brutality. And we have to understand that a lot of the protesters weren't only just protesting. to end police brutality. They were protesting in advocacy for the police force, for higher salary, for change in their environmental stay, where their police barracks were in deplorable conditions. So they weren't just, you know, focusing on themselves. They were focusing on the fact that these are essential workers in our country. These people put their lives on the line to make sure that the country is safe. But if they're not getting paid a salary that they can sustain themselves and their families on, you then create an atmosphere where you have petty corruption, where they have to stop people in order to grease their pockets to supplement their income. So there are many root causes to what has really caused this whole issue to come about, and we need to address those root causes. And this is what many of the protesters were talking about. They looked at the well-roundedness of the issue, not the fact that, okay, police were using excessive force, but why were they using excessive force? Did they receive enough payment to support themselves? Is their living conditions adequate? Do they receive health care? All of these issues are lumped in one. So we have to also understand that as well.
And if I just stay with that again, Grace, you know, sometimes it felt like citizens may fail also to sympathize with the real situation of the police and other military apparatus. Dr. Itunde has mentioned there that the protesters also want better conditions for the police and the army. Now, do you, as you've been there observing and reporting on security, does it seem like the security forces are also overwhelmed by violence, either from the terrorists or even from just, violent criminals? They themselves are victims of violence, too.
Well, they are. They rightly so. One of the people that I spoke with, and you know, there's a big divide between the citizens and the security operatives. You know, there's lack of trust. There's that fear that is instilled in the minds of people that is making them stay away from anything that has to do with security. And so there's that element of distrust among them. So, but honestly, what I have seen from the discussion that I had with some of them, as you know, I had that encounter with them, but part of the discussion that I had brought to fore the situation, the level of need that they have, particularly some of them were saying that there are times that they will be asked to be out on the field, and they will be there, and they will be on their own. They will have so many needs, but so to say, they are unable to get their needs met. You know, I'm sure you must have heard or seen reports of people saying that a lot of the money that is allocated to fight this Boko Haram or this insecurity that is affecting the northern part of Nigeria is being diverted, whether rightly so or we don't know, it's something that somebody might need to find out. So the people that I interviewed were talking about if they have this improvement, if there is that attention being paid to the police, and we had a town hall with the Minister for Police Affairs, who also rightly said that they are taking measures, and they said that if nothing else, this NSAS has opened their eyes to the needs, not only to improve the welfare of the police, but also to find a way to relate better, have a better relationship between the police and the citizenry.
Yeah, and indeed the welfare of the police is a big question all over the continent. Well, you're watching Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, so don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
from around the world. Let's go.
Today we are talking about the recent protests in Nigeria. Our guests are Alhaji Lai Mohammed, Minister of Information and Culture of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, who spoke last week to my colleague Peter Clotty, Dr. Yetunde Odbesan Omide, Professor of Political Science, Farmingdale State College, and Grace Alheri Abdul, Managing Editor of the Voice of America's House of Service. And now, following the protests, President Muhammadu Buhari's administration said it will continue to dialogue, listen, and carry all stakeholders along in ensuring that there is no repeat of what happened. Let's listen to Minister Lai Mohammed.
To the best of my knowledge, this is the first time in the history of, you know, complaints against police brutality that within a period of 4 days, federal government will not only accept all the demands of the protesters, but will put in motion machinery to actually actualize these demands. And this is the first time in the history of Nigeria that state governors have been asked to set up panels of inquiry. This is the first time that state governors have been asked to provide victim support fund. This is the first time in the history of the country that the government will react to police brutality by setting up panels that will include students, civil society organizations, and the youth. So we have shown good faith.
Well, Grace, you're on the ground there, and the minister said quite a number of things there. Have these actions by the minister that the ministers mentioned been taken, and have they given confidence to the citizens that their demands will be met?
Well, first of all, Lagos state government inaugurated a committee even before the president agreed to that demand by the NSAS protesters. That was one of the demands, to set up a panel of inquiry and bring these people to justice. So those panels have been, the president ordered that all states of the federation set up these committees. As I'm talking to you right now, as of today, not all the states have inaugurated those committees, even though some states, as at my last count, 25 states plus Abuja, FCT Abuja, have those committees put in place, and they have started sitting. I visited, attended some of those sessions, and one of the things that became very clear to me in Lagos, for instance, was that even when people have genuine cases, the day I attended that panel, I saw 4 people, and they were specifically told that they will not be attended to the court. I mean, the panel will not listen to their case until they bring a lawyer. Each one of them is supposed to come with a lawyer. And I interviewed one very elderly man who was just there on behalf of his church member that was killed, who told me that the lawyers told him he needed to pay $300,000 upfront before they will even stand in for them. So that is already becoming an issue. And secondly, I interviewed also some people who said that they don't even have faith in that process, because they felt that they might be in deeper trouble presenting themselves before that panel, because the people that brutalized them will be forced to appear before the panel. They said they might not, at the end of the day, get justice. So a lot of people are skeptical about that. And some are saying that this is not the first time government is enacting or setting up panels of investigation, but nothing comes out of it. So people are going, some people are going, some people are skeptical, and at the same time, people are still not trusting this process.
Well, Yetunde, the minister has done something there, though. He has acknowledged that there is police brutality and then promised that the government is taking all these steps. And Grace mentions that some people don't have confidence in these panels, in this process. What can the government of Nigeria do to give people that sense of confidence that they can actually trust this kind of panels and whatever other forums that the government is creating to resolve these issues?
Since we are talking really about the security of individuals who are already scared, that's some form of retribution, some form of a payback for speaking out and showing their faith against what had happened to them or their family members or close ones may happen to them. They, and because, you know, there have been instances historically and present day where people have tried to, you know, speak the truth, right, and challenge the government and come forward with their stories. And they have either been attacked, they have either been tried to, you know, silence. We have seen where even peaceful protesters who have been detained in an effort to silence them, the government and also the police apparatus have taken different measures. So people are seeing that. And, of course, that does not give them the confidence that they need to really come forward and tell the truth and really try to seek some form of peace or some form of reformation from the government. And I think with labeling things fake news, I think also with focusing on the hoodlums and the hijacking of the protests and also the way in which they have grouped peaceful protesters with as hoodlums and how that has overshadowed it, I think it does not give people the confidence that they need to really engage in this process. And if they want this process to really take root and to really steer the course of reforms in Nigeria, nothing can be manipulated. Mm-hmm. Not the law, not the police, not the legal counsel, not the government or the judicial system. And unfortunately, we have seen that been manipulated and weaponized over time. And so that is the change that needs to be happen.
Yeah, it looks like the government has to do some soul searching and figure out a different methodology in order to give confidence and trust to the citizenry. Well, the Minister of Information, Lai Mohammed, says the government is committed to carrying out police reform. Let's listen to him.
Peter, I have told you, not only have we promised reforms, we've actually embarked on the reforms. You see, many people with ulterior motives are riding on the back of the NSAS project to make political demands. As far as the issue of NSAS protests are concerned, the government is very honest. The government is very committed to bringing about these reforms. Some of them can be done immediately. They are being done. Like the setting up of the panel of inquiry is being done. Like the setting up of the victim support funds is being done. Like the retraining of the defunct NSAS policemen before they are redeployed into mainstream police, you know, units. It's been done, you see, but there needs to be trust between the two parties.
Well, there needs to be trust between the two parties. Grace, when you speak to the citizens, what are they saying? When they hear the government officials say what they're saying, and they say there needs to be trust, what do the citizens want to see?
I think that's the problem. There's no trust between the citizens and the government. As a matter of fact, the young man that I interviewed in Lagos was saying that the leadership is the problem. You know, everything he would say, the leadership is a problem. Lack of information is a problem on its own. Because if the government is forthcoming in telling the citizenry what the government is doing, and I don't think they would have this mistrust. But the thing is, as they have said, the government is saying one thing and doing the other. And the young man specifically told me that on the internet, he said, go on Google and you'll see it, that when the governor of Lagos State presented their five requests to the president of the country, he said the president laughed. And he said that meant that he did not take them very seriously. And so they are saying that they have now seen that they can come out and have a voice. And they are not going to go quietly. They will continue to make the demands that they are not fighting the government. They want a better government. All they are saying is that the government should do the right thing for the citizens because the government are political office holders and they should be held accountable.
Dr. Isunde, is the problem here actually the police, for example, the security apparatus, or the politicians, who are the policymakers, who do not make it good even for these officers to do their jobs in a way that will make the citizens really have confidence in the activities and have trust in them?
Look, the issues that are facing Nigeria are a lot to even divulge in this whole one setting. And what the NSAS protest really did was put a lot of these issues to light. We're talking about access to adequate education. We're talking about people to have access to adequate health care. We're talking about safe and secure roads. We're talking about trying to get rid of petty to grand level corruption. We are trying to figure out how do we ensure that the country has a safety net where people who are not employed, where students who graduate the top of their class get out and there's no job. How do we reduce the rate of unemployment in the country? So you have to understand that there's a number of issues that when social protests erupt, those things are thrown into the whole pot of it. And this is no different than what you probably have seen in the Arab Spring. And I've always said that Nigeria is probably the burgeoning of what we call the Africa Spring. And what you're going to start seeing is that the young people that are protesting today are not the same people that their parents were, right? When I speak to my parents, of course, who came from Nigeria about 30-something years ago, we're not the same, right? I have access to social media and to technology. I have the ability to connect to someone in Sokoto, in Lagos, in Maiduguri, just sitting here in New York and trying to weave back and have conversations on what is going on ground. People can mobilize from a different country to raise issues about what's going on. And the leaders that are in Nigeria are, you know, many of them are of an age of an older generation that has yet to understand the power that the new generation wields and the resources that are at their hands. So when we talk about NSARS, we are talking about now the multitude of issues that have not been addressed. The fact of the matter that senators get extremely large allowances, that some of that money can go to different federal allotments in education, in healthcare, in infrastructure, in innovation. So there are many issues on ground. You can't talk at all, but at least hopefully they understand the reckoning of the resources that the new generation has.
Yes. Now, Grace, you know, this question of trust is really, I think, a big one. What do the citizens want to see from the government for them to have faith that the government really means it when it says that it wants to have this police reforms and when it wants to make changes to the system? What do they want to see from the government for them to have that trust?
Yes, they want to see the government. When they say they will do something, follow through and do it. There shouldn't be too. When you are in government, it is okay. If you are not in government, it's okay. So what they want to see happen is that when the government enacts a law, for instance, or when the government says it wants to do something or is going to do something, they want to see that done, regardless of who is involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they have seen so many promises that were never kept.
Can I just add one second?
Yes.
Okay, you remember all of the warehouses that were found in different states of all the palliatives and the resources that were kept for COVID-19 dispersal, and all of the people in the communities getting so angry who were suffering during the beginning of coronavirus, saying that look at all of the rice and the food that was meant to be distributed to citizens. Again, those are what we're talking about with trust. But one thing is that we cannot blame the whole federal government for this, because if these resources were provided to the governors, if they were provided to the states, right, we also have to hold accountable governors. We have to hold accountable local politicians, local chairmen of many different constituencies who are also not carrying out their responsibilities. We like to throw a lot of the responsibility on the government because, of course, they lead our country, but we actually have to also hold governors, senators, we have to hold local politicians accountable for ensuring that they do what they're supposed to do for their constituencies.
I think when Nigerians talk about government, they are generally talking about political office holders, regardless of what position. You can be a councillor, you can be just a desk person. So long as you are in government office, you are supposed to have responsibility. They want you to execute your job the way it should be done, regardless of what position you are, whatever level. That's what they are saying. And they are not just talking about federal government.
And I think in most of the African countries, one of the things that infuriates the citizens is that they see this political leaders getting wealthier and wealthier as their citizens get poorer and poorer, including those who are engaged in very critical sectors, whether they're doctors or security forces. And this doesn't seem to change, right?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't seem to change. And that's why I said that we have to really look into our priorities. There is no reason why, unfortunately, our senators make this absorbent amount of money. And we have our essential workers in our community who are fighting to just survive and provide for their families, such as police work officers, such as doctors, people who are critical to the development and to the innovation and building of our infrastructure. We really need to look at the priorities that we have around placements of positions in our society, on how we have placed politicians in our society. You know, as a professor of political science, politics, of course, is important. We elect people to be in office to represent our needs to the greatest ability and to be able to be our voice and make the changes that is needed in the various constituencies. We don't negate that fact, but the fact of the matter is that politics should not be looked at as a business. Right. Politics should not be looked as a get rich quick scheme. Your job is as a public servant. Your job is to be able to take all the desires, the needs, the frustrations, the concerns of your constituencies and try to make a difference and try to make something that is better. So, of course, we want to look at those who are elected and from local all the way to federal to say, OK, what have you done? What changes have you made? And you know, it's very disheartening to see that when you have young people who are educated, who go to school, who do the right thing, and they can't and they can't get a job, or the roads is what impeded them to getting from point A to point B, that is under the local jurisdiction of that state. So there's so many different things that are happening, and I hope, and like I always say, that Nigeria is a beacon of hope for the whole African continent. We have some of the most intelligent and most the smartest people in Nigeria and in the diaspora. And I know that if we continue to work hard and get it right and not silence the voice of those who need to speak out and correct where there's wrong, we will really continue to be an example for other countries to lead by.
Grace, you wanted to add something to that, the whole question of the young people, like those who are protesting. In fact, just always having to look at this big men, the Oga, the chiefs with their big vehicles and having a lavish lifestyle while they are groveling in poverty despite of their education, despite of their hard work. That is many times fueling this kind of protest, right?
Yes, even though the government is saying that right now they have put into place mechanisms to make sure that they provide the resources young people need to be self-reliant, so to say, saying that all the time that government alone will not be able to accommodate all these youth, all these young graduates that are in the job market right now. I spoke with the vice chancellor of university and who was telling me that on a yearly basis, Nigeria graduates over 300,000 students and from the university, and 90% of them don't eventually get government jobs. So they are saying that they are trying to find ways to make sure that they are gainfully, I mean, they have something that they can do on their own so that they can be self-reliant. One of the things that the young man that I interviewed in Lagos told me was that what they want to do, this has become an eye-opener for them, that what they want to do is to make sure that they empower young people. What they want to do come probably 2023 is to make sure that they have enough resources that instead of allowing youth to be used by politicians to just be political thugs, they want to empower youth so that they can stand on their feet and demand that the right thing be done, demand that the right people are elected into government offices, political offices.
Well, the right people who will be servants of the people, not lords over the people, not the masters. Well, let's get the last word from Nigeria's Minister of Information, Alhaji Lai Mohammed.
That on the 11th of October, the Inspector General of Police disbanded all SARS formation in each of the 36 state commands and the federal capital territory. I said on the 12th of October, the federal government said, Mr. President rather, said the disbanding of SARS is only the first step in a comprehensive reform of the police. I went further to say that the president also promised that everybody, any policeman who is found guilty of police brutality or abuse will be brought to justice. So how can you now say that the government stands and says there is no police brutality? And I went further to say on the 13th of October this year, the presidential panel on the reform of SARS accepted all the five demands of the NSARS protest. I mean, I think we have shown in word and deed that we accept there was police brutality.
Wow, isn't that something? The minister has acknowledged there was police brutality. And I think the protesters won because the government has disbanded, by the minister's word, the unit. Now, what do you make of that? Is that one step towards building confidence by the citizens?
I think that's a rhetoric that from the onset we expected the minister to actually provide. I think he has taken the right step in trying in communicating that the government does accept responsibility and they acknowledge the extent of police brutality in the country. I think that it is good that he has taken the step to also state that we have seen the demands, we are working towards the demands. However, of course, people want to hold the government accountable to ensure that all of those demands are fully carried out. And really to ensure the disbandment, when we say the disbandment of SARS, we don't mean the reallocation and shifting of these same police officers, right? We want to see and ensure that there are trainings put in place, that this unit in themselves and the officers that are part of this unit are not necessarily enrolled back into the police force, therefore causing the same type of issue that we have seen before. We don't want a different name, and I think people are saying that there should be a different name so you can get away with, you know, still having the unit but just rebranding them. That will address the issues. But I think him acknowledging these issues shows some form of an empathetic response. I would have wished that it would have been done earlier in the onset, but yet we've arrived there and we've gotten there. And now with all of the eyes looking on them globally, I think they really truly understand that this is a different time and in place. And the tactics that may have been used in the past to quell and quench such protests is not the tactics that can actually be used in this current day with this generation. And I truly hope that the pressure that has been put on the government in a peaceful and constitutional manner continues so that we can see the end of these results and it just doesn't sort of die down and shift focus to something else.
Yes. Now, Grace, how has been the reaction of the citizens following the disbanding of SARS and also the government's acknowledgement that there has been police brutality and that action will be taken to correct that?
Well, first of all, immediately the government disbanded SARS, they created SWAT. So yes, that is also worrisome to them because they are saying, where is this one coming from? They did not even give it time to study it and see how they can make changes and make, you know, the job, to make sure that they get it right this time, but immediately created another one. Why did they get the people that will be in this unit? So that is the first reaction. So that was why even after disbanding SARS, they still felt enough needs, there's so much that needs to be done. And again, like we said earlier on, people are still very careful about taking what government is doing totally. They just want to watch and see whether this will translate into practical reality and bring the needed change. So it's something that Nigerians are watching to see what happens, and only time will tell.
Yes. Dr. Yetunde, do you get the sense that sometimes the reason why politicians in some of our countries can make promises and break them is because there is no system of accountability? And so to just immediately fix a situation, they can make 1,000 promises and break them all in a few months because nobody will hold them accountable.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that it's very hard in a situation for regular citizens to hold government officials accountable when they have a lot of these judicial systems and connections and networks in the palm of their hands. And so I always say that in an area sometimes where the judicial system can be manipulated to benefit one's own case or one's own perspective, it makes it definitely harder for others who don't have those resources at their fingertips, for those who don't have those connections or networks and even the money to do this. And so what people have end up having is their voice, and they end up having their life. And sometimes they have to choose between the two. And so we really have to sometimes commend those who speak truth to power and who raise the alarm to many of these issues, knowing what they are against, legally, judicially, knowing what they are going to fight against. And it's not an easy fight. We have seen many people who have brought issues to light, who have been silenced in one case or another. So I hope that we get to a point where those people are protected. I hope we get to a point where the judicial system is fair and equal for those who have money and those who do not. And when we get to a point where the politicians know that they're public servants to those who they serve. Yeah.
I want to get a very quick one in a few seconds, Grace. Do citizens sometimes feel like they're in the middle here? They're victims of police violence, and also at the same time, they are victims of violent criminals. They need the police, but at the same time, they're scared of the police.
Yeah, the most definitely. Most definitely, because like I said, I went to a community where I saw houses being destroyed, families losing their loved one, and this violent demonstration. I saw businesses being destroyed, but they were still afraid to talk because there is a lot of security presence in their midst. So there's so much fear that it's instilled in the people, whether consciously or unconsciously, they are afraid. So that's the situation right now. So it will take time and process for them to get to the level where they need to be, to have that trust, to know that we are in a free country, we are in a free society. I should be able to approach a policeman like you see done in civilized societies, and that this one will protect me and is not intimidate me or not, at the end of the day, be the criminal that some of them are even saying some of them are.
It is really sad. It is unfortunate. We just hope that things can improve and that the politicians, the policymakers can make the changes that are necessary in order to make the citizens feel secure, feel safe and confident in their government. Well, on that note, I'd like to thank our guest, Alhaji Lai Mohammed, Minister of Information of the Republic of Nigeria, who spoke to VOA last week, Yetunde Odbesan Omede and Grace Alheri Abdul. Thanks to our audience for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. Have a good evening.